My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. I am Darren Hupke, the host of the show. If you are a returning listener, thank you so much for coming back and checking out another episode. Hopefully this is another entertaining one for you, and I appreciate you for coming back week after week. If you are new, it's a simple pitch. I sit down with a guest each week and I ask them a video game related prompt or question, and we talk about it. It's 20 to 40 minutes or so each episode. This can stem from topics like what's a underappreciated or below average game you love that doesn't get enough attention, or what is your history with video games? When did you start playing and when did you fall in love with them? Or why do you play the games that you play? It could be a lot of different things. The conversations can go in a lot of different directions, but the point is just to have a great and thoughtful conversation that maybe sparks your own ideas or your own interests as a listener to think about your own responses and hopefully just have some fun along the way. If you like what you hear and you want to support the show, I've got a few different ways you can do that. I have links in the show notes below to everything that I do, and I'll highlight one of those in particular. Beat 'em Up Volume 1 is a love letter to the genre. Volume 1 of the series breaks down the Final Fight franchise and covers the entire series. So you get histories and development details, artwork, screenshots, magazine scans, a lot of artifacts from the era covering every game in the franchise from the 1989 arcade original all the way up to 2006 and the release of Final Fight Streetwise. There's also chapters that cover where the series is now, its appearances in other properties like Street Fighter, comics, TV shows, cartoons, all those types of things. So if you're a fan of beat-em-ups, if you're a fan of Final Fight, this book has all the history and all the details I hope you will enjoy and love and find something new about one of my favorite franchises of all time. You can buy it physically over on pixelsandpolygons.net, but you can also buy digital copies over on my Patreon shop. Links to all of these will be in the show notes below, but check it out. Beat 'em Up, Volume 1. With that out of the way, we can start the episode right after an ad from one of our Soundstone Network partners.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, everybody, welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke, and I am with returning guest and fellow Soundstone Network collaborator, one of the hosts of Kirby Conversations and show friend for life. We've got Sean Douglas on the show. Hello, Sean. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Darren. Thanks for having me back.
Yes, it is always good to chat with you. Hopefully... Well, you know, this it could come up. I don't know the answer to your question, but if Mega Man comes up again, we might be running long again, because I like talking about Mega Man. But if you didn't hear his last episode, we talked about a game that we think gets it just right, and you can go find that in the show archive, but we had a fun conversation around Mega Man X4. But today we're doing something different. Let's before we get into the icebreaker, Sean, how about you tell us, this is going to be an early 2026 episode. So do you have a gaming resolution, or do you have something you want to accomplish, or is there a game you want to play that you're excited for? Like, what is something 2026 excitement wise that you are looking forward to?
So there's a game that we'll talk about for this podcast that is part of how I want to kick off the new year with video games. Another game that's just sitting in my backlog right now that I'd like to get to is Final Fantasy 16.
Ooh, 16. So I enjoyed 16.
One that I've had just sitting around for a while, been hoping to get to, but really want to like plan out a chunk of time to do that. That feels like a game I really want to like sink my teeth into rather than just to kind of pick up and play once in a while kind of game. So I'm waiting for a good chance to do that. But at least at the, as the time of this recording, we're kind of on the cusp of like winter break and some time away from school for me and stuff. So hopefully it'll be some time to get into Final Fantasy 16.
Fun. Yeah, I skipped 15. I never played that. But when 16 was announced, I kind of liked that classic kind of throwback of like crystals and summons and that really kind of classic Final Fantasy kind of vibe with their like, you know, 3D real-timey type of a mindset they had as well too. So I gave it a shot and I quite enjoyed it. I mean, I played it enough to get the platinum trophy and, you know, did everything I could from completionist wise. And I was surprised by that, but it was entertaining for sure. I enjoyed it. So hopefully you dig it. Well, let me know when you do play it. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. I also recently got the analog 3D. So I've been going back to some Nintendo 64 games again. So I'll probably spend some time with those too.
That's cool. Yeah. I love that. That looks just really sleek and neat. I've wanted to see about investing into a machine like that. I do have the Polymega, but that plays its games via emulation, you know, not as an FPGA, you know, thing. So I'm not a super, ones and zeros like tech head kind of guy, but from my understanding, obviously the FPGA like hardware is the superior way to kind of like play some of these classic, quote unquote classic games, you know, with being able to on like modern TVs and displays and whatnot. So it's something I've always wanted to kind of look into and getting, but I don't have one yet, but that's fun. Have you been enjoying some classic 64 games with it already?
I have, yeah. I got it fairly recently, so I haven't had a ton of time to try it out yet. But I was playing some Banjo-Tooie on it, which is a game I know I've talked about on this show before. Mm-hmm. I was playing some just Super Mario 64 on it again, just kind of getting a sense of like how the picture looked. And I wanted to play with like a game I was like pretty familiar with and could kind of compare it to what I knew it looked like in other situations. And also some Mischief Makers, which I think looked great on this one, like the kind of the 2D, 3D aspect of it looked great on a big TV.
Cool. All right. Well, that's neat. Well, let's get into it. I've got an icebreaker for you here. I'd like to ask you, who is one of your favorite non-main characters in a game? So it doesn't have to be like just like an NPC or anything, but just somebody you don't control or don't play as. Do you have one of your favorites ready to go?
My favorite non-main characters. So I'm like immediately thinking of like games that have like parties or like fighting games that have like big rosters. But I wonder if they all count still as like playable characters.
No, I mean, I know you're a big fighting game fan. I would say, you know, if they're not like the cover star or they're not like the main storyline, like, you know, no Jin Kazama or anything from Tekken. But if you wanted to, you know, drop, you know, Law or Mojuken or whatever. I mean, yeah, like, go ahead. I think that's fair game. I think it's just that non-main character energy. Like, who was one of your favorites in that regard?
I think I'll try to go with the series that, like, I haven't talked about in the show yet. I know we've talked about, like, Crash on the show before. We've talked about various fighting games before. And I also really like the Paper Mario games. And it's been a while since I've played through Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, but that's one of my favorite games. And I'd say maybe just like the crew you get in that game, I think, is like really memorable. I need to double check some of their names. I think it's Admiral Bobbery, like the Bob-omb, who's like a sort of crusty old sailor. So maybe I'll go with Admiral Bobbery, just off the top of my head. I like him a lot.
Fun. Okay. I've not played.
That's a very random, more kind of on the spur of the moment answer. And I could probably think of way better ones if I had more time to think about it. But
well, that's how
I do
these...
like the Thousand Year Door crew.
Yeah, that's how these questions work. They're to, you know, catch you by surprise. So you pull out like a weird odd one like that. No, so that's good. I've not actually played the Paper Mario series myself at all. I did dabble into the Mario and Luigi like Superstar Saga. Like I love that. And I played, I think, the first one on the DS, but after that I kind of fell off of that. But I did quite enjoy those games, and I do like the bringing the Mario series with some, you know, RPG elements and some kind of adventure and exploration elements. This is kind of a fun way to bring out some charm and some. Usually they have really good writing and comedy and everything in them as well too, which I enjoy. So one day I should go back and play those. I know they have that Thousand Year Door, that re-release has come out and everything, but there's a series I definitely should check out.
Yeah, I haven't played the re-release yet, and it's one of those things where it's like I have so much to play that it's like, do I go back and play a game I've already played that I know I like, or do I devote my limited video game time to something new or not? But yeah, at some point I should play the remaster version.
Yeah.
And it's just such a funny, absurd, clever game.
Mm-hmm. Fun. Okay. Well, you came on to the episode to answer a question. And so I've got that question here. You have talked about something similar to this before. We answered this question before. You brought a really good story the last time when we pulled this topic up. So I'm excited to hear about what this could be today. But the question is, what is a proud gaming achievement or challenge you've accomplished? And what is that story? So, yeah, what is that challenge you've overcome that you know, really brought out the good feels and the proud accomplishment feel for you?
For this one, it's not something I have completed yet, but it's something I'm in the process of doing.
Ooh.
That I'm finding very rewarding, which is, for a while, I really wanted to go back to a game that I didn't have a lot of information about and play through it just using a physical guide as really my only resource. Like, not looking up very much online, not having a lot of, like, you know, back context about it or anything, and really kind of relying just on the materials one would have had at the time they were playing it. Because I do feel like nowadays when I play a game, I usually know a lot about it already before I even play it. And I at least, like, you know, even if I don't know what happens in it, I've seen reviews for it, or, you know, it's been announced, I've kind of followed its development over the years. And it's just a very modern way of experiencing games, right? They're very mediated through the internet and stuff. So having this very kind of, you know, having a different way entirely to experience a game was something I wanted to try. Partially for nostalgia's sake, but also just kind of the mystery of it. It's feeling like you're going through this game with nothing but this like book as your sort of like treasure map through it. And I'm playing through the PS1 game Threads of Fate right now, just using a guide from Brady Games. It was written by Tim Cox. That it's actually been really fun. It's just a different way to play a game than I normally play games, but it's been fun to uncover secrets just kind of using a guide to help me. It feels like you're getting this kind of esoteric knowledge almost about this game. And there are obviously plenty of other ways I could look up things about this game. But not only is it satisfying to play through it in this kind of physical analog way, but this is also a game from my childhood that I never saw the end of. So it's fun to go back and try to sort of answer a question in a sense that was started, you know, years ago when I was like, I want to say it was like fifth grade or something when we first got this game. And it's always fun to feel like your adult self is in conversation with that older version of yourself from the past. Or I guess I should say the younger version of myself. It's been fun to just revisit this game that has kind of always been there sort of as this like game that I don't really hear very much about otherwise, but enjoyed as a kid. And now I'll kind of finally see it through to the end. Just kind of me and this guide and little CRT TV, and enjoy it the way one might have back in 1999.
What was the, what's the thing about it that like draws you to it the most? Like, do you like the, like that mix of genres that it is? Do you like just like that classic kind of B-tier like Square games, or they're really trying some, you know, funny things, some different things? Like, yeah, what about Threads of Fate do you like calls to you the most?
So this is one that, you know, last time I was on, we talked about Mega Man X4 and how there are like two different characters you could play through that game as. Kind of coincidentally, this is also a game that has this structure with two different characters. And that's, it's not like I'm normally particularly drawn to that specific kind of structure. It's more coincidental, but I do think that framing is, you know, is a nice structure for things. And when my brother and I were younger, we started it as the character Rue. So there's Rue and there's Mint. Rue can, so this is like a sort of real-time action RPG made by Square. A lot of the team also kind of ended up working on like Final Fantasy games and stuff. I believe the director was like previously a programmer on Chrono Trigger. Like, I've deliberately not looked too much into like background about this game, so I'm going into it pretty cold, even like after all these years. But as kids, we played part of the way through with Rue. And then, so I decided like picking up the game again as an adult, I was going to play as the other character that we hadn't started the game with, who is Mint, who's, so Rue can turn into, when he defeats enemies, he gets these coins and he can turn into the monsters, and that's like his whole gimmick. And Mint uses magic. So she's this sort of kind of bratty but comical sort of princess who's like trying to get revenge on her sister. And like both she and Rue are in search of this mysterious relic. But like, well, Rue has more kind of noble reasons. She has more selfish reasons, but it's still kind of like funny and sort of endearing in her own way. It's sort of comic relief in some ways compared to Rue. But I like the magic system a lot. There's just a lot of different spells she can learn and kind of switch up on the fly. So you're constantly kind of adjusting your strategy that way. And I like the way the system rewards using your abilities rather than feeling like it's punishing you for using your abilities. In some games, I feel like I have to be really conservative with how I use my spells or use my magic. But in Threads of Fate, you increase the size of your MP meter the more you use spells. So you're constantly getting to do more the more you use the spells. And enemies drop pickups to restore your magic, so you're constantly kind of getting it back again, or you can do her regular attacks to build up magic and stuff. And you build your HP the more you take damage. So just kind of the more you play, just kind of the stronger you're getting along the way. And I like that system a lot. And I think it's a game that also just has this interesting kind of dreamy, almost mysterious sort of vibe to it that I think lends itself really well to this kind of way of playing, where you're going into it as a kind of mystery. And the soundtrack and the graphics and just the general tone of it, it does have this kind of mysterious, dreamy vibe to it. So I feel like I'm on this sort of kind of interesting kind of ethereal adventure into the unknown, where I genuinely don't know what's going to happen next. And going into a game with that level of suspense and mystery is just kind of an uncommon experience that I don't have that often. So it's been a really fun way to play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least not since you were probably a child and you're actually playing through games like that at the time. Like, it's just a fun way to try and experience and force yourself to kind of like learn and see. From our last episode, we talked about Mega Man X4, and we talked about how some players, you know, after playing that for, you know, over the years and over time, speed running it and things like that, you find the ways to like min max and understand which does the most damage and which does what's the fastest way to get through a certain area, which character might be better. That is like something we innately do now with video games, like especially in a game that even has choice or character creation or things like that. There are players who will, you know, boot up Elden Ring for the first time, but read somebody's guide on, you know, do this build to have the best chance against, you know, this type of, you know, enemy or boss, or, you know, you could, you know, play through a fighting game and see who the most popular character is because of, you know, X moves and strength and balance or whatever it may be. So what you're doing, going through and choosing to play through Threads of Fate, like essentially, you know, you have the guide to kind of like, you know, help support you, but, you know, you're essentially playing in a way that's, you know, sectioned off from the rest of those like predetermined decisions, and your this challenge is kind of setting yourself up to like experience this game in a way that's, you know, essentially impossible from today's world and the age of the internet and everything. So it is an interesting challenge. What gave you the idea to do it, and what was the draw for you to want to try and play through the game this way?
Well, it's something I've been thinking about doing with the game for a while, and there's a past episode of Kirby Conversations too where he kind of talked about the idea of how like it would be fun to play through a game with just a guide sometime. So I thought that this would be a good time to finally do it, and this was a good game to do it with, partially because it's a game that I just don't have a lot of information about. And I think even with a lot of games that I haven't played, like just by osmosis, like culturally, just by following video games, you pick up things, you hear about things. And this is just one that still felt pretty mysterious to me in a lot of ways, but also one I really remembered liking and knowing I wanted to finish. And I think it lends itself well to playing with a guide too, because even if I'm someone who generally doesn't like to look up the answer to something in a game, unless it really feels like I've kind of tried everything and I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm ready to move on and figure out maybe what I'm doing wrong here, but I tend not to look things up. This is the kind of game where you do kind of just wander around a room, you know, clicking X to see if there's some item you can't see on the screen, and then in some corner of the room it's like you found a silver coin or something, where sometimes I kind of just like to know there is a silver coin in this area or something, and like it's fun to still look around for it for myself. But just kind of checking the guide and being like, was there something here that I missed that I won't be able to go back to and get later, just to kind of see, because it's not necessarily like something I would have necessarily known about otherwise. There is one thing that I found from looking at the guide that is this kind of, you do a specific sequence of things and then your character has a dream and they see this thing in a dream. And then if you go to that place, you can get a special item and stuff. And it was a cool thing to learn about. But it was something I wasn't going to do on my own. And so just having that extra thing there to be like, by the way, there's this other thing in the game. I'm glad that I knew to do that. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. And I think it made the game more fun rather than feeling like it spoiled anything. So I'm not glued to the guide or anything. I'm still playing it mostly just kind of on my own. But it's fun to check and feel like I have this sort of roadmap for the way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think having the support of the guide is still important, because obviously you're not going to be able to recreate and replicate what it was like to play a game in 1998 again, like 100%. But even then, even games in the earlier 90s, like when, you know, less access to the internet, you know, around for folks, there was still a social element of playing games. You know, everybody had like their handful of NES games they'd either pass around or borrow, or like you mutually own as well. And you may have, you know, been really strong at something, but then you had a friend whose uncle worked at Nintendo and knew about this secret code. And like, so you would still kind of through osmosis, like learn things even without necessarily like spoiling things. And that was just kind of like, there was that social experience of it all that still like allowed you to learn things new or to gain a better insight in how to potentially accomplish something. Cause the ultimate challenge is, you know, to somehow be in a total 100% vacuum with no guide and no anything, and, you know, try to start to finish, like complete a game, you know, is the game designed and paced and balanced and challenged enough to like lead you there appropriately? Or, you know, will you get stuck and ultimately without any type of guardrails like that, like never be able to finish it, which would be more of an insane challenge to do. But yeah, I like the balance you have here of kind of like playing games the same way you kind of would in your youth anyway. But yeah, that's cool.
This game is so wacky sometimes too, that I think it works really well to go into without things spoiled or without knowing what's to come, just because it does feel like a game that's going to genuinely surprise me. One of my favorite moments that I haven't gotten to in my new playthrough yet, but I know is coming, and I almost did this as a different category. I almost did this as a wow moment question or something. But one of my favorite bosses, maybe like in video games, like maybe not my favorite boss of all time or anything, but like definitely like among the more memorable boss fights I've ever found. There are these rival treasure hunters that are kind of also after the same relic you are. And this one recurring guy, like in one level, he's dressed up as a star because he's trying to blend into the background in this one more whimsical area with these big stars in the background and stuff. So he's dressed up in this homemade star costume. And you can trigger this battle or not, but if you talk to him and meet certain conditions, you'll fight him as the star. So his name is Duke, and so you can fight Starlight Duke, who's the star version of him, and you just fight him in this silly costume, and it's very silly and very farcical, and like it's still like a decently challenging boss fight. It's just with this guy in this silly homemade star costume. So it has nice moments like that where it has serious moments. It's not a game that is like overly jokey or anything, but it also doesn't take itself too seriously. And a game that's able to surprise you like that. I don't know. I don't feel like when I play video games nowadays, I'm always that able to be surprised by them. And this is a game that I think can really like pull rabbits out of its hat for me and be like, well, what if this is going to happen now? What if this wacky boss is going to happen now? Like, I don't really know what's to come, but it really does compel me to want to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah. This was a neat era for Square. Like, obviously it transitioned to the PlayStation with Final Fantasy VII, and you know, that ended up being, you know, more of a financial success than even their best case scenario was, and that opened the door to allow them obviously to continue with that series, but also it felt like it really kicked the door open for like RPGs and just that genre that had never quite made like that big push here in North America and even in like the European territories as well. But based on all that, the kind of rolling success going into like at 98, 99, like this game came out around the same time as like, Chrono Cross, which was a crazy thing to try and follow up, Chrono Trigger with in a new and colorful and inventive way. And then, Legend of Mana also, which was really like neat and like watercolory and painterly and, had some cool, like a sub mechanic of like building out your world and how you're exploring everything. But, they all like took advantage of different technologies. Like obviously Threads of Fate is all 3D, like with 3D cutscenes and everything, no animated sequences or anything like that at all. They wanted, and no pre-rendered backgrounds or anything. It was just a full 3D game. Which was a neat challenge to take on themselves and to kind of push the PlayStation in that way. But it's just, yeah, the games weren't like dark and brooding. It wasn't like it was, anything too heavy. It was just like a fun new way just to kind of like take the genre through a spin and try some new things with it, but still have it feel like approachable and lighthearted enough to like not weigh you down or anything. But this was just a really good era. Like, you know, just nostalgically, like I love looking back at all of these games on the PS1, which it makes sense. I guess that's why I do the books that I do. But it was a good era. So it's a cool selection and a cool game to choose to do this challenge with, I think.
Great soundtrack as well. Mm-hmm. Also definitely worth mentioning that too.
Yeah. So then I think what we need to do then for sure is when the challenge is complete, we'll have to get like an update from you. You know, if you were able to successfully do it, how did you enjoy it? Did you purposefully like try and do you know everything, or you know, I just love to hear, you know, revisit the challenge once it is complete for you, and then maybe even see if you plan to follow it up or chase it with another throwback game like that. I don't know what your intentions are beyond that, but yeah, I think that'd be a cool thing to do.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like I'm liking this experience so much that I will probably pick another game that I know very little about to try to do the more playing the game the way it was at the time it came out strategy.
Yeah. But try one of the Saga Frontier 2. That was always one I never finished as a youth, but it was, that had a neat like chapter based format that kind of like broke the game up in a different way. Which I always thought was kind of cool, and a weird cast of characters.
Is Threads of Fate a game that you're familiar with?
Yes. Well, I mean, I played a demo of it, and I never actually bought it when I was younger. I forget which game it came with. I want to say it came with like Vagrant Story or something like that. I don't know. It was another Square game that it came with. It could have been Chrono Cross. Yeah, I remember playing the demo for it, and I remember at the time like getting good vibes from it. But there's a another one, Legend of Legaia, or however that's pronounced, for the PS1 that had like almost like fighting game mechanics for its battle system. That was like another like fully 3D type of like RPG. I had a choice between, you know, getting a new game, and I ended up going with that instead of this. And I never went back as a kid to go back and get Threads of Fate again later. But when I was putting together the volume 4 of the 32-bit library books, I did play through it. I didn't beat the entire game or anything, but I played it then as an adult, and did like, I enjoyed like the spin on like, you know, having the real time, you know, kind of control and kind of like adventuring. It's almost like, you know, there's like some even like platforming like elements in it within the design of it too. But yeah, it's definitely different. It's fun, and I definitely I wish I would have not skipped it as a kid, because it's probably another one that I would, you know, think back on like super fondly for and everything.
Yeah, I remember playing a demo of Legend of Legaia as a kid. There was a demo disc with like a whole bunch of different things on it. So maybe that could be my next guide challenge.
Yeah, that one's really good.
We can have kind of inverse experiences where we can both play the game that the other played the demo of back in the day.
I think you'd like Legaia just because of that battle system. You pick like, you know, you pick like left, right, or like, I think you even pick like kicks or something, but like you have like a bar that's limited by how many inputs you can put into it. But when you put in the right combination of inputs, like left, right, right, or something like that, it will do a combo, which essentially is just like a special move or a magic attack type of thing. But it's, you know, for a fighting game fan, it definitely would be something that would probably like scratch the itch for like both things. It's not real time at all, but it's just kind of cool to like think about combat in a different way that is like fighting adjacent for sure.
Yeah, I remember thinking the demo seemed really interesting.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed that one. But yeah, any other final thoughts then on either Threads of Fate or on this challenge? Anything you're nervous about doing, or anything else you want to maybe kind of say before we wrap it up?
I think it just is a nice opportunity to reflect on what a video game is and what that experience can be, and how it is so mediated by the internet nowadays. And we do live in kind of this blizzard of conversation and discourse about the things that we're playing. And it always feels like, even if I'm not playing something directly with people, right, you're sort of still kind of like playing it, knowing about this community that's all around it, and thinking about it as a distilled experience, thinking about it in terms of these like physical objects, like a physical book and you know, a CRT TV that has a little heft to it, and it's just kind of you and this little TV and the glowing screen that enhances the kind of inherently sort of tranquil dreaminess of this game. Like, there is something about it that feels like a fundamentally different way to experience a video game, and just it's changing the way that I think about what games are in a way more than I realized it might be. And it's, I don't know, it's going in some philosophical places for me that I like. I like kind of thinking about the curated experience of what's going on here, and thinking about other things I could do with games that make me experience and think about them differently too. You talked about like the schoolyard and stuff, and it makes me think it could be fun to try to play a game kind of like this too, but rather than the guide, you just play it relying on other people, where like you all kind of agree to not look up too much about the game, but you're all still relying on one another's experiences. So like, if you need to figure something out, you have to ask the other people or something how to do something, rather than looking it up on your own. Like, I think that could be a cool way to play a game too.
Yeah, I mean, almost like a book club supporter, like type of thing. Like, you're not all playing through it collectively, but like, hey, you're an expert on this, you have a strong memory of this, you think, all right, well, maybe you can point me in the right direction when I need it, or when I'm stuck, and let's see if your guidance can help me actually overcome the challenge of the game. That would be interesting.
Maybe we need like a Soundstone play along or something.
Yeah. That would be fun. Well, we'll look for that. You know, maybe that would great make it could create some great YouTube content for that growing YouTube channel. So for those of you who have not yet subscribed, head over to our Soundstone Network YouTube channel and subscribe there. But great, Sean. Thanks for doing another episode. Thanks for chatting again.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, definitely, obviously, open invite for you to come back anytime. I look forward to chatting with you again in the future. Again, in the show notes below, you can find like the social media links and things to Sean's shows and Blue Sky and things like that. But yeah, thank you, Sean. And you have a great rest of your evening.
Thanks. You too.
Oh, hi. I didn't see you there. I'm Nick McConnell, and you caught me reading the instruction booklet for Street Fighter 2 in preparation for my weekly stream Instruction Derby, where I take a look at the creative, fun, and sometimes bizarre lost art of video game manuals. Did you know that, according to the manual for Street Fighter 2 on the Super Nintendo, Ryu was born in 1964, making him 62 years young, canonically? Happy birthday, Ryu. You're looking great. Did you also know that, per the manual for Laser Invasion on the Nintendo, the UN enters a conclave in order to select a new commando? Or did you know that the dancing enemies in Super Castlevania are named Paula Abgul and Fred Ascare? These important facts and many more are discovered every Wednesday at noon Pacific on Instruction Derby, over at internet website twitch.tv/Nick McConnell, part of the Soundstone Network.